start the show.
For Thursday, September 14th, 2017, welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. Thanks for joining us this week. I'm Norm, joined by a color-coordinated duo to my left. They could very well make up a Hollywood movie poster. It's Jeremy Williams wearing orange.
Hello.
And Kishore Hari wearing blue, some type of light blue. It's like a...
I'm going with a cyan.
There's not green in that to be a cyan.
Okay.
Cyan works for me.
I tried. Yeah,
it's a sky blue.
Cyan was one of the CGA colors.
Why is this sky blue when the blue sky is much darker than this?
That's a science question, Kishore. Maybe you can answer that. How are you guys doing this week?
There were two CGA palettes.
Oh? Yeah. Tell me. The CGA are monitors.
The computer graphics adapter.
Right.
Yeah, from the color graphics adapter from the early 80s, before your time.
Yes.
You don't remember the age of four
colors. No, I remember. All I know is VGA.
God, the sky's the limit.
Yeah.
VGA.
256 colors, 16
right.
million colors.
No, it is 256.
Does he even know what monochrome is?
No.
No. He doesn't even understand that word.
Is that an Instagram
mono.
Filter?
Yeah.
Could be. Is that something I can do into an animoji?
Foreshadowing.
Oh, yeah. We're going to talk a bunch about this, the stuff going on this week. Of course, there are lots of things happening in technology news, but... let's start with how are you guys doing? How was your weekend?
Pretty good over here.
Yeah?
There was a
no
thunderstorm. Oh my God, there was a huge thunderstorm. My kids were so excited, and then they were so terrified.
You know, having talked to many people with kids around that age, around five, I just have friends in the age group who have like 5-year-olds and 10-year-olds who live in San Francisco. We've never had a thunderstorm like that.
No,
like,
it doesn't happen.
No, I don't recall one. This is the part of the podcast where everyone should be rolling their eyes at us that live
right.
in normal places.
Yes. Anywhere in the Midwest, East Coast, massive thunderstorms. We have rain. We have something that maybe passes off as rain, maybe a heavy drizzle. But this past Tuesday night, or was it Monday night?
Yeah.
It was the heaviest rain 1 week after the hottest day on record in San Francisco.
Is that a fact?
Yeah, it was wow. 1 week ago. It was crazy hot,
and it's back to foggy and drizzly.
And now it's back to like 70s and drizzly. I was at a ball game.
Oh,
I was at the Giants game.
It was. It didn't even start until 11 o'clock.
It didn't start until 10:50. We got
wow.
one batter up, at the top of the first inning. One batter out. The game was scheduled to start at 7:15 p.m. They had already delayed it since then to about 7:45, 8 o'clock. One batter came up.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rain started pouring, and everyone went off the field and did not start back up until 11 p.m.
And you were there with your family.
I was there with family. Family was in town from the Midwest. They came to town also partly to watch this game.
Okay.
To watch baseball.
I wondered why you stayed.
Yeah. There were people there who wanted to watch the game.
Yeah.
I was there for the experience. The seats were good enough that, they weren't good enough because we were one row. It was amazing. You watch the crowd because like you're in a brightly lit baseball field, right? Baseball park, and you can see all the stands from the bleachers to the standing room to across the way and when the rain started coming, everyone just moved, right?
Bolted
to inside to grab food and drink, or went under the overhangs. And we were seated one row in front of the overhang. Mm. But thankfully, the people behind us left, and so we took their seat immediately. So we saw the rain come down right in front of us.
It only took one row?
One row.
Wow.
Right there, one row, eating our hot dogs, drinking our Diet Cokes, watching the rain go on and off.
See, you tweeted around 10:50 probably, hey, we have a ball game.
Yeah.
I figured somebody made a home run. But
no, I mean, hey.
You meant literally.
A ball game has started. And I brought my camera, so I took a bunch of pictures. It was really cool because you had the field team. The field management team like run on the field, cover the entire field with a tarp, And then it was like 20 people who grab the tarp and pull it and fold it like a giant, you know, like a tarp.
It's origami.
And they did it multiple times. And then, you know, they painted the lines and they had to go, you know, refresh the mound. But most people left. It was kind of sad because it was a home game for the Giants and we're playing our arch nemesis, the Dodgers.
And you're only behind them by like 40 games.
Right. The Giants are like the second to worst team in baseball right now. The Dodgers are the best team in baseball, best record. Giants are out of the postseason, no chance this year. Dodgers needed this game to clinch the postseason. And Dodgers also were on a 10-game losing streak going into this game. So Dodgers fans wanted them to beat the Giants. Now, the sad thing was that because of the rain, on most normal people who live in San Francisco, maybe bought tickets to the game, if you're planning to be there at 7:15 and the game doesn't start until 10:50, you're gone by 9. You're done. You're like thinking, there's no chance the game's coming back. That's so right. Most people went home. Yeah. But the people who stayed, the vast majority of people who stayed, Dodgers fans, because they had nowhere to go.
They traveled.
They made a special trip. They didn't care. They wanted to see the game.
So is it worth staying up till 2:30 in the morning when it's pouring rain to watch a baseball game?
Yes, because the Giants won.
No, it's not.
Because the Giants won.
No.
It was never worth it.
Never worth it.
It was a good game, too. We got up early, 4-0, then they came back, and then we got up, and then we won 8-6.
All right, I'm going to make an executive decision here.
No more baseball. I'm reversing the executive decision, going back and talking about the weekend, because something awesome happened to me.
Oh, my gosh.
I ended up interviewing Bill Nye on stage in front of 1,500 people.
William
at the Nye? Castro.
At the Castro Theater in San Francisco, site of the Tested Live show. It was amazing to be able to talk to Bill Nye, and that guy digresses like nobody's business.
Mr. Tangent.
Yeah, it was incredible. Wow. He was like, what do you got there? A circle? Here comes a tangent.
Oh, yeah.
It was amazing. Actually, it was a really good conversation because when we hit the stage was the moment Irma was making landfall. Mm-hmm. And there are all these comments from governmental leaders, including the EPA director, saying like, now is not the time to talk about climate change. So we talked about climate change a bunch.
Well, what is it the Bill time Nye. To talk about? Guns?
Yeah, somebody said that, which I thought was hilarious. But it was a really enlightening conversation. He actually revealed a whole lot more about himself personally. His mother actually worked on the Enigma program during World War II and was a codebreaker for the U.S. And his father was actually a prisoner of war. And he had gone to he was stationed in the Pacific at this place called Wake Island and was captured in a battle there the day before Pearl Harbor.
The best map in Battlefield 1942. It was a demo map. Mm-hmm. Wake Island.
And two nights before that event, he had gone to the reunion of that POW group.
Oh.
And there's only two members left alive, but they meet every year to sort of reminisce. And he said how meaningful it was to go there. And, you know, we look at figures like that and, you know, Adam included in that bunch of as being sort of these giants of communication, but it was really sweet to hear some of these personal tales.
How did you prepare for that interview? Because obviously Bill Nye, he's known for TV show, known for his political views. He's talked endlessly about, you know, climate change awareness. What was the angle you wanted to go with? Was he promoting?
He has a book out called Everything All at Once, which is a little nerd manifesto. So I read the book, but honestly, I've interviewed Bill Nye before on my podcast, and it was easy to interview him because of how much was happening in the world right now. There's a new NASA administrator that was just announced. We talked about the eclipse. We talked about the Cassini mission, which is ending tomorrow. So there was plenty for us to talk about without even touching upon some of that stuff. And when we're backstage, he started telling me these personal things. Mm. And then it was just easy to insert that into the conversation. The best little piece, 24 years to the day that we hit the stage, was the premiere of Bill Nye the Science Guy show.
Wow. That's cool.
It was pretty cool.
It was packed theater?
It was so packed. Did you I've never in? Received that much applause for myself.
Well, just wait for the Tested Live show, October 28th.
Is there any way for people to watch this? Was it streamed or anything?
I don't believe it was recorded.
Okay.
That's too I'll bad. Have to double check on that. But, cool. You know, there was some other pop culture news this week, I guess.
Yeah. Let's talk about Star Wars. Why not talk about Star Wars?
Mm-hmm.
That's my review of this news.
Well, you're talking about... Well, last week we speculated who would be a good director or replacement for Kevin Trevorrow, who had been dropped as director of Episode 9. Episode 8 isn't even out yet, right? So but we're still talking about Episode 9.
Terry Gilliam?
That was my pick.
All right.
I said Joe Cornish.
Which would have been a novel pick.
Danny Boyle.
Danny Boyle, right. Well, they went with someone maybe their safest bet... And I guess we also said Spielberg. That would be cool if Spielberg did
I always
Star
wanted
Wars.
To see that. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. That would have been a bigger risk than who they picked.
They went with the safest bet, but also maybe the least predictable, because a lot of people were hoping that a safe bet might be Rian Johnson. You know, if they're happy with what he did with Episode 8, maybe let him do Episode 9. I don't think anyone, someone probably guessed it, but I don't think anyone like saw this as a viable, I don't know what the Vegas odds were, but had it in their head. But J.J. Abrams
is
directing Episode 9 and writing.
I guess rewriting or writing with Ryan?
I don't know.
I don't get that
So
part.
He did come in and write Episode 7.
Mm-hmm.
They took the original script that forget me, scriptwriter for Toy Story 3, Michael Arndt, had written for Episode 7 and basically threw most of it out. I think he got a story credit, but... So maybe this is – what do you think the story is here? Do you think it's something J.J. fought for, or is another one of those Kathleen Kennedy went to J.J. Abrams and said, you're the only one who can fix this problem and do it?
I'm sure he was on the short list of phone calls. I'm sure the phone call was like Rian Johnson, J.J. Abrams.
Yeah.
Clearly probably J.J. said, I want to be able to rewrite things.
Right. He would do it his way. Yeah. So you don't think he got it out of his system?
I think there's a check with a lot of zeros.
Well, he also, he was a really perfect fit for Episode 7.
Why?
Because of his love, his capability, and love of the material. And those things, he understood the material, and he is a great director.
He also has familiarity with big franchises and being able to sort of caretake them through the process of what is essentially a reboot. I know 7 wasn't a reboot, but essentially was.
Yeah, it was bringing it back.
The myth of his being sold on taking the job for Episode 7 was that Kathleen said, please do this, and he said no. He said, I won't do it. Because
he was obligated to Star Trek.
No, I don't even think he likes Star Trek.
He directed two of those movies.
That's the story.
He produced the third one.
He was not a fan. He's not a Star Trek fan.
Well, he's not a Trekkie, but he loved the script.
Yeah, okay,
fine. He loved making those films.
But he loved Star Wars, whereas he didn't love Star Trek.
So you think it was too precious to him, and he felt like it was too much hollow ground.
That's the story. And so my question is, why does he feel like he'd like to come back and do Episode 9?
Because it's not, because now he's... The chip is off the shoulder. There's no.
Is that it? I mean, and now is he free to do something he wasn't in the first one? In Episode 7? I don't know.
Well, that's the other thing. He's of the caliber of director alongside Ron Howard, who was brought in, and also, Tony Gilroy, who was also brought in for Rogue One. Ron Howard is extremely experienced, extremely capable, is not only a director, writer, and producer, but well regarded. He's not a new director, so he's not getting pushed around. J.J. Abrams also probably isn't getting pushed around by a producer, whereas some of the younger directors or newer directors, regardless of what they've done and how much success they've had in the past, they're still employees to working under a big company, and maybe they didn't have as much control as they wanted.
So how do you feel about this? I personally went into Episode 7 starry-eyed and optimistic, and I came out okay about it. I like Rogue One more. But Episode 7 was just kind of okay. I'm looking forward to seeing Star Wars pushed a little bit harder with this December.
I think...
I'm a little nervous that J.J. is going to play it safe again.
No, if it's the end of a trilogy...
Give it to me.
You can't play safe the end of a trilogy.
Return of the Jedi?
That wasn't safe at all. The space battles of Return of the Jedi were the most amazing... All the build-up leads to this.
Yeah. That's right.
I poo-poo this idea. because for very similar reasons that Jeremy laid out. I think it's safe. I think it's it lacks inspiration. I think it it will it it has it sets a bar for a 7 out of 10 for me. It, I don't see him directing like a really high end, lasting generational movie.
Well, I think we all have Star Wars feelings. So was that Jedi? Jedi was is largely thought of as the worst of the three original films.
Yeah, it's the worst of the three films. What are you talking about, Norm? That's like empirically available data.
Fine. Yes, it is. If you needed to rank the three original trilogy, it is the one that is not as good as what New Hope did as a groundbreaking hero's journey, and also the dramatic change and cliffhanger of Empire.
Yeah.
The boldness of Empire. But I think people give Jedi too little credit.
No, Jedi's a good movie.
Yeah. I love Jedi, but it's largely thought of as the worst of the three.
Maybe it's because of the one I grew up with. But regardless, the trilogy, the main movies in this 7, 8, and 9, they're all going to be safe. These are not made to be risky movies.
Yeah,
we talked about this last week. They're made to be movies that make $1 billion at the box office, and you know if you're going to hope for riskiness, let it be in these offshoot movies. Let it be in the TV shows. Let it be in the other ways this universe is explored in the video games. You're going into episode 8 and 9, and I think it's unfair to hold. To put the weight on these films to be these generational milestones, like it's tough to put that on any franchise. It's just a piece of entertainment. It's just 2 hours of entertainment. It doesn't need to be on a pedestal.
So look, I hope I'm wrong, but let's imagine this scenario. Let's say you were talking to J.J. Abrams or knew somebody talking to J.J. Abrams. Maybe even tonight, you knew somebody talking to J.J. Abrams. Yeah. What would you ask him?
Ooh.
And for the listeners, Adam is actually interviewing J.J. Abrams tonight on stage in San Francisco as part of City Arts and Lectures. So what would you – I mean, you have an inroad to ask Adam to ask J.J. Abrams something in front of a couple thousand people.
It's a really good question. Like,
isn't Jedi better than people think?
Yeah.
That would be it. You talk about the original trilogy, his feelings about that. That's it, because he won't talk about.
How about the Starkiller Base 2?
See, that was the worst part of his movie, was the whole Starkiller Base and the fact that it destroyed entire planets we had no feelings about. We saw the laser beam fly through space and people on different planets. We didn't have any association with these people.
Couldn't have been a laser beam. It wouldn't have flown through space like that.
No, would it?
Thank you, science of Star Wars. So there was all this like drama that we wasn't properly arced. That was my feeling about that whole part. And I wonder if JJ like acknowledges that it wasn't a perfect film, and now he would like to redeem it, and he can come back and make an even better film. That's my hope.
My question to him is he more interested in telling a hero story or a villain story?
That's an interesting question. I would actually like to know. I mean, I doubt he would be able to answer this. I would like to know what that conversation was like with Kathleen Kennedy, because maybe we're not giving her enough credit, because she always gets her way.
Oh, yeah.
It seems like no one says no to her.
No, she's the boss. And the movies have been successful.
Yeah. Yes.
And Rogue One was amazing. And we're all looking forward to Last Jedi. I think the fear I have for this trilogy is that there is no Darth Vader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kylo Ren is not a Darth Vader imposing character.
Sure. Like
Rey, I think, is going to maybe is on the path to be just as good as or surpass the journey of Luke in terms of how satisfying and how much character development and but there is no villain equivalent right now.
Snoke could get there.
That Snoke plays the Emperor's role.
Yeah.
It's the one pulling the strings.
He's all evil. Villainous. He's all evil. But there's something possibly redemptive.
But there is no iconic
about Kylo. Right,
and Kylo, I guess, is a fan favorite now. You know, especially with the kids. The kids love Kylo.
Do they?
You have a kid. He has a kid.
No.
Kids love Kylo.
No.
They don't love Kylo.
No.
Kids love Darth Vader.
Everyone thought Kylo was gonna like the toy manufacturers thought Kylo was gonna be the bomb. Everyone wanted Rey toys.
Right. And they didn't make any.
Yeah. It'll be fine. When Luke is revealed to be Snoke, we'll all get what we want.
So Rian Johnson was interviewed this past week, the director of The Last Jedi, and he revealed beyond any question who The Last Jedi is.
Oh, no. I don't want to hear this. This is a spoiler.
Yeah, is it? Because he didn't intend it to be. He said he's shocked that this became a question.
Yeah, right. Because he said it was...
Is it Luke?
It
Luke is.
Is
the last Jedi.
It is Luke.
And he said the reference, why he was shocked, is he said, in the opening crawl of 7, it says, Luke looking for the last Jedi, Luke Skywalker.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So he's like, why are people confused about
this? Well, because people are crazy fans of the series and want to read into everything, including the three words of the titles. I guess, you know, if you look back 15 years ago, people weren't freaking out about Attack of the Clones, the title. Yes, they were.
Oh, yes, they were.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, we were.
I remember. We were working together. And when it came out, that Attack of the Clones?
I remember Ewan McGregor finding out from an interviewer in line for some event. And he said, what? They named it that? Anyway. You know, we should probably withhold any feelings about J.J. directing Episode 9 until we've seen Episode 8.
That's right.
All right.
That's right.
All right, that's
done.
Yeah. The only fear is that if Episode 8 is so good because it's different, if they let Rian Johnson take the risk that we're hoping he gets to take because of the past films he's made, he wrote and direct this, then the bar may be set higher for J.J. Abrams.
Then Kathleen Kennedy will step in and make things known.
Wow, J.J. doesn't get fired.
No, J.J. absolutely. No. Absolutely not.
No one is safe. Yeah. Kathleen Kennedy story.
What has he made since Force Awakens?
JJ?
Yeah.
Money.
Residuals. Points. Off the gross. He hasn't directed a film since.
I don't think so.
But he's produced a ton of stuff, but yeah. It's weird.
We should let things lie and actually check in with Adam and see how his conversation went. I'm sure they'll be on Still Untitled next week.
We'll absolutely be talking about it on Still Untitled.
Do we have some quick hitters before we get to the big news of the week?
A bunch of other stuff going on in the pop culture world. We talked about last week the casting controversy for the new Hellboy reboot, where Ed Skrein, I still know how to pronounce his name, took himself out of the running to play a character because the character is originally a Japanese character. And they have now recast that role, and they have cast, speaking of J.J. Abrams' produced and directed series, Daniel Day-Kim.
I like Daniel Day-Kim.
I like Daniel Day-Kim, most recently of Hawaii Five-0. He also left that series because of contract negotiations, and he's a fan favorite. So people are very happy that he is going to get this role. Now, people may know Daniel Day-Kim from Lost, of course. He was also on Angel, and he was on one of the best episodes of Star Trek Voyager.
Oh,
we can't talk about this. No, we're not talking about it. But it's a great place for me to say that we've heard... You out there? We've heard the people, and we're gonna do it. We're gonna do.
Oh, the DS9.
The DS9 Watch Club.
Here's how serious it was. So last night, I think it was last night. It was like 11 o'clock. I had been working. I came home. I was like, I'm gonna just turn on something. I open up Netflix. I see a DS9 there. I type in Slack.
Emissary Part 1.
I'm like, I'm gonna just start watching DS9 within 30 seconds, Norm is on Slack beat. No, just across the screen. No,
you do not watch without watching the other. If we're going to do a watch party, we got to coordinate. And for the first two, the pilot, it's got to be a watch party.
And we want you to watch it with us. So we all watch it, and then we'll talk about it and comment thread it.
That's right. It's not going to start this week.
No.
We're not committing.
We'll do it soon.
But the homework for this week is you got to come up with a name for this DS9 Watch-a-thon.
Well, someone said trekking with Tested.
I don't like that.
Too alliterative.
Show them what you got.
DS new to you.
Getting closer.
It is, because it would be new to me.
Yeah.
So I'm watching this with fresh eyes. Here's my request, is that we come up with a format to dissect it every week that doesn't last too long, because we got a lot on the show already. Mm. So we need to come up with a time limit of some kind, format.
We'll find a way. But okay. I think we should do an unauthorized commentary.
For the first episode.
For the emissary.
Absolutely.
Really?
Because I think there are a lot of contextual setups that need to be talked about in place. Where are you? You're at season 6 in TNG. You don't need to finish TNG.
What? Yeah, he does.
I mean, no. I'm saying you don't need to finish it to start DS9.
Yeah, okay. Oh, gotcha.
You don't.
Finish to wrap up TNG as we are starting DS9, because things will happen concurrently as you wrap up TNG.
Recording a commentary, though, we're going to miss half the dialogue.
right? No, we'll be fine. Some of it, it's just up here.
Well, captions. Man. Captions will be on.
Oh, is that what you do with the movies?
Yeah, that's the secret.
Oh, sure.
Watch them with captions.
Huh.
Yeah.
All right. We'll figure that out.
A couple more things. On a little bit of a sad note, we had a passing comics creator, Len Wein, had passed. He co-created Wolverine.
That's a character you've heard of.
Yeah.
Jeremy.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is summer.
So this is a big deal.
Yeah.
Actually, Stan Lee will be doing a signing at my local comic book shop.
What's your local comic book shop?
Amazing Fantasy.
Oh, in Irving.
On Irving.
I don't like that store.
The owners are super nice to my kid.
Oh, good.
And so favorite comic book store, but he's doing a signing there. And all of these people, I walked into the comic book store. They're doing like, they want Stan to come in and actually spend a few minutes talking about Len.
Oh, that's
great. Which would be great.
I'll tell you the weird thing about that comic book store. And I don't know if it's you that told me about it. I've always had very weird relationship with the comic book store, and I only recently discovered why. It's because the owners are twins.
Yeah, I told you that. So I didn't figure that out for a long time. I thought it was one person. And then there was a signing once, and they're both there, and I was like, oh my God.
This is some weird comic book stuff happening.
I've been catfished for a long time.
Glitch in the Matrix.
It seems to me that Stan Lee going to a comic book store is huge.
Yeah.
Right?
Especially, this is like the comic book store is the size of this room.
Yeah,
it's not very big. Bigger. You know, it's a really small place.
Wow.
But, it's awesome.
Yeah, there aren't many comic book stores left, in big cities.
Yeah. And, but RIP Len, nothing more iconic than Wolverine.
Absolutely. He was a character that launched, you could say, launched the Marvel, superhero movies as we know it today with X-Men 1 in year 2000. Definitely launched Hugh Jackman's career.
Oh, the movie.
Yeah. I actually watched that recently. It's so young.
You watched the second one.
I watched both of those recently.
Or do they both hold up?
Second one has always held up.
Mm.
Second one is still one of my favorite comic book movies ever.
And then don't watch the third one.
And don't watch any of them afterward.
First Class is good.
They're all, the one. Everyone following is okay.
Okay.
I actually like First Class.
No.
Speaking of movies and comic book movies, we finally have confirmation. Patty Jenkins is signed to direct Wonder Woman 2.
Oh, I didn't hear that. That's great.
Highest paid female director of all time.
That's
well earned.
She's getting more money now.
Yeah, well earned deserved. Because that movie made so much money.
Heck yeah.
Like, she deserved every penny and some. So I'm excited for her. I'm hoping for Cheetah. For Cheetah.
What are you talking about?
That's a Wonder Woman villain that I'm hoping for in Wonder Woman 2.
Did she get the budget she wanted for the first one? Did she get anything she wanted for the first one?
I don't know.
I'm sorry, what do you mean? Like, in terms of
like just production? Making the movie she wanted. Yeah,
what I hear. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, it wasn't a big risk of a movie. It definitely was anticipated, but it wasn't in terms of for WB before it came out. They didn't hold it as high as a Batman film or a Superman film, but they should now. I mean, it is, I think, the fourth highest grossing movie of the year so far. Hugely successful. I mean, not without its flaws, as we've talked about, and there are some things I wish that the ending would have changed, but definitely looking forward to the second
one. Yeah, I'm especially looking forward to seeing what her second film is, or the second Wonder Woman film.
You got to have a good origin story.
With the first one, like, if there weren't budgetary constraints, there were almost certainly administration constraints and people telling her what to do. Yeah. Now they can't do that.
And you would think she'd have a lot of freedom in terms of style. And the story, because she's a Wonder Woman, left that first film without much baggage.
All right. Is that it for pop culture news? Anything else you want to talk about?
Nope, that's it.
I finished
end of
the leftovers. I finished the leftovers.
Ugh, too bad for you.
What?
I haven't watched a single episode. Just, I know so many people that don't like that.
No. If you are interested, if you like Lost but were disappointed by the ending, watch Leftovers.
I swear to God, I thought he was talking about yesterday's Mexican food. I swear to God.
I binge watched this series, 28 episodes. Most nights, eating Leftovers or watching Leftovers on HBO Go. So good. That's my pop culture recommendation for this week.
I'll make one other note. Orville is like watching a bad TNG.
There we go. Yeah, let's talk about Orville a little bit. We were very built up for, very pumped up for the Orville. This is Seth MacFarlane's sci-fi show. It's on Fox. It's an hour-long show. They premiered on Sunday after a football game. Football season's begun. And the trailers made it look like Galaxy Quest. And we were excited for that. You know, the lighting, the set design looked very reminiscent of Star Trek Next Generation, very bright carpeted floors, the aliens that were very, like, they felt very much a callback to TNG, but didn't know how much it was going to lean toward Family Guy style humor, because it's comedy, or science fiction. And it looked like they landed somewhere in the middle. So, Kishore, you watched the pilot?
I watched it. It looks like TNG. It operates like TNG.
A little bit like a lower budget version of TNG.
I mean, but it's that like brightly lit,
yes,
kind of well-meaning characters. They're all kind of like 90s, proper.
Early 90s, mid-90s sci-fi.
Mixed in with a little like Seth MacFarlane humor. And I found it just bland.
It didn't work for me at all.
It was just, I didn't hate it. But, like, there wasn't anything there for me to even watch episode two.
And part of me is thinking, like, what's wrong with this formula? Like, I like comedy. I like science fiction. Is it that these two things can't work together? That's not the case at all. Rick and Morty, hard comedy, very subversive comedy, and hard science fiction, lots of deep ideas. This show, The Orville, at least in the pilot, now, I'll give it a couple more episodes, it didn't seem like it had any grand sci-fi ideas. And the comedy was just... It seemed lazy.
Yeah, it wasn't funny. I didn't like any of the characters. And the villain they introduced wasn't that villainous.
Yeah.
They seemed incompetent.
Right. Like, was good.
I could see people who aren't diehard sci-fi fans missing that element of needing big sci-fi ideas. Like, that's something you might get lost in the aesthetic and the idea of being futuristic and not realize the importance of needing a grand idea.
Right. Sure, but there's nothing at stake in this show. Like, what's at stake in the show is he has to serve with his wife, who he's divorced from. Ex-wife.
Yeah.
Like, that's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
All right.
It felt like they didn't hire writers, and I don't know whether they did or not. It didn't feel like had the science fiction twists and turns and deep, like, the thing that could have made the show, at least the pilot, work really well for me is if they felt like an episode of Star Trek. I don't mind humor. If it felt like an episode of Star Trek, and it didn't even feel like, it felt like a Star Trek fan film.
I don't mind it.
Yeah. All right, September 12th, 2017.
Oh, wow.
A day that will live. And smartphone infamy.
I kept telling Norm, we're doing this other project all day today, and I kept saying, Norm, why do we have to do this podcast today? Norm said,
Jeremy, the people need to know about the new iPhone.
That's right.
I thought he said, let's do one at our place.
So, Apple announced, had their big event. We didn't go. 350 media seats. It was in the new headquarters in the Steve Jobs Auditorium. Underground, a bunker of auditorium.
What an amazing theater. I mean, underground theater.
Yeah.
This is cool stuff.
It did look good.
It wasn't a WWDC event, so this is purely for product, not about for platform.
Yeah.
And they announced several products. So let's go in order of what they announced.
The first thing announced was retail.
So this is interesting. They start off with retail. I guess they do champion the success of the retail. Like, some would say their retail, their stores are as much products as the things they sell, and it's one of the reasons for their success. No other. It's a huge asset to Apple. And so the woman who runs retail, who was
Angela Arendt.
I can never pronounce her last name.
Yeah,
she was previously CEO of Burberry, high end retail. And who took over after two people after the guy who left to do JCPenney. She came on stage and they announced a bunch of changes to their stores. They're not calling them stores anymore. They're calling them town halls?
Yeah, that was a little eye-rolly.
This is like a cult.
Yeah.
Like, it felt 100% cult-like. Like, we have these new buildings now with meet our white shirts and sometimes blue shirts in our town halls where you can learn the ways of Apple.
I'm usually very cynical about this kind of stuff, and so I get the naming of it was terrible. But what they talked about doing was having a space where they have daily, you know, talks from creators and artists and musicians that use Apple products about how they use it, and do more tutorials about how to extend your Apple products into a professional realm, that like sounds great to me. Like I didn't really feel it's the name that drives the cynicism, like all the presentation aesthetic. But if they're just doing more like how-tos in stores, I'm fine with that.
I've never really taken advantage of that. Maybe it's something we should look into.
No, you're not the target audience for that stuff.
I'm not. I mean, most people go into the Apple Store, to, aside from buying accessories and product, for support.
Yep.
Right? And as long as they get their support, keep up, you know, whether the Genius Bar system, the line short, and keep the system efficient, keep people happy, customers, people paying customers happy, whatever they do to make it a gathering place to learn and stuff, that's all great.
They've got to experiment with this stuff. I mean, retail, everyone knows retail's having trouble. So the malls are disappearing. Big stores are having trouble fighting with Amazon. Apple's found a way to be successful with it, and they're just rolling with it.
Well, they found a way because they only sell their stuff.
Yeah, but it's not just that. I mean, I think that they have transformed the shopping experience in a way that people actually appreciate. And the support stuff where you can sign up online and you go in and you check out anywhere. There's no cash registers.
It only works because of the margin on their products and because they can pay for that.
Yeah.
Like Microsoft has tried it, but really hasn't worked because they don't have that lineup of products or that demand.
By the way, I have found the Apple presentations ever since Steve Jobs died to be kind of painfully interminable. And I really liked her presentation. I thought she did a great job.
She did.
I'd love to see her more.
Next was Watch, right?
Yeah, so Apple Watch. Series 3, third generation. And contrary to some of the rumors, no new form factor. It looks almost exactly the same as the Series 1 and Series 2, which is great for anyone who bought one last year.
It's also kind of impressive since they put cellular in it and didn't have to increase the form factor.
Yeah.
So there it goes. That's the big feature. The Series 3, which is available tomorrow, has an LTE cellular chip on there. Which same battery life, so it doesn't kill. That's another achievement. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that means that the Series 2 will get better battery life.
The Series 2 is discontinued.
That's the other thing. I mean, through software. But now their lineup is Series 1, which they're still selling, I think, $260, what you have, Jeremy. And Series 3, which starts at, or the sport model, not even the stainless steel model, $330 without cellular.
Yeah.
With cellular. $400 for a watch that's not the silver model.
It's the iPad.
That's crazy. So people thought $250 is too expensive for a digital watch.
Yeah, it's
double, and it is.
It's double what an Android watch with cellular in it has.
And man, this new sport band, but who knows what that's made out of? What it costs $50.
$50 for a sport
like
band?
Like a plastic watch band.
Go back 5 years and tell someone that Apple doesn't expect you to spend $400 for a watch that has a limited battery lifespan that you probably won't use for more than 3 years, and to use its full functionality, $10 a month.
Oh, did they announce pricing for cellular?
Verizon did. $10 a month for your watch.
That's what I expected.
First 3 months free.
But
to get to convince you on it.
Huh. So all the pricing stuff is super outrageous. That's fine. That's also like a hallmark of a lot of Apple products, so that's not surprising. I actually thought some of the functionality for the watch, especially with the AirPods really taking off these days, that's actually a good use case that you can stream cellular music. You have access to your full library, and it go to your AirPods. That's a use case for a lot of people
And they really dove deeply into sports, right? This is for athletes. It's better tracking for your heart rate. It will detect more than just the heartbeat, but it will try to match that with some of its algorithms to give you notifications about irregularities, perhaps.
They made a big deal about the health stuff. And Cleveland Clinic came out with a study last year that the Apple Watch was the best heart monitor of all the smartwatches on the market. It had 91% accuracy. If that's the case, it can actually monitor your blood pressure, or you know, your pulse rate, not your blood pressure, your pulse, and
stick a needle
and actually you know, notice changes that actually could be something meaningful there.
No, they said
it's still not worth it.
Right, they said they're the biggest watchmaker in the world now.
Yeah, they passed Rolex.
So, and every watch, Apple, no matter the low end to the highest end, the edition watches, the ceramic watches, which they don't even sell anymore.
They just announced a new dark ceramic.
They did? Yeah. Is it still like $10,000?
Yeah, you don't want to know. Jeez.
So every one of those has a baseline sensor. And so they have the big data on health. And that's something that Google doesn't have on health right now. So they have a leg up there. But with cellular, what can you do, right? Because you're still limited to this small screen with this limited, relatively limited battery life. And storage, you can stream.
It seems like a small use case. I mean, you're talking about people who are deliberately away from their phones.
Right. So streaming music while running.
That's it. Like, it's exercise. Yeah. What else is there?
And making
exercise?
Phone calls, right? Making phone calls and streaming music.
Yeah.
But you can't get away with not having a phone and the watch, because if you want to have a plan for the watch, you're gonna have a phone plan anyway.
Oh, no. Like, it can't be your phone.
No, it can't.
Yeah. Right. I mean, this can't be your phone.
No.
Yeah.
No, not yet. I mean, if they made it compelling enough, but they're never going to, because they want people to buy phones. They want people to spend a lot of money on these phones. So you're right. When are these cases? When do you not want to have your phone?
Exercise.
I have been to the gym. I know I don't look like it, but I have been to the gym, and I always have my phone. It's not a problem. So this is people who want to run without anything in their pocket, I suppose. I mean, this is like a smaller and smaller use case. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if this is actually a thing.
$10 a month.
If people want that.
Jeez.
Yeah, plus, who... Buying a whole new phone. I don't know.
Buying a whole new watch.
Watches.
$400. Yeah.
The cheaper one, the one without cellular, is you do get GPS. So I guess if you want to run with your phone, you still get the benefit of having GPS on there. But
you have GPS in the Series 2.
Yeah. So that's also, you don't have that in Series 1.
Right. And
so that's now.
And so if you were looking to get a new watch.
That's a weird skew too. It's just
$330.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's expensive. Yeah. I think last year Series 2 was a pretty sweet point. They could have been more. I mean, it's a question of like they added. It's not a trivial feature to put in, right? Cellular, regardless of the useful case. There's a lot of technology,
Dick
a lot of R&D. It is Dick Tracy, but as a annual product grade, I don't think we're at a place where we need it as a society yet. And people might have wanted more form factor differences, or maybe battery life. Like, there could have been other things they put the research into.
Yeah.
I don't know how high on the list in terms of consumers' demands was LTE, cellular connectivity versus battery life or different form factor. But that's what they announced. From watch, they went to television, small screen to big screen. So no TV, no Apple TV yet, but a new Apple TV, but no television.
Mm-hmm.
Apple TV, as expected, 4K. And something you might not know about called high dynamic range.
Why are you saying that?
Or HDR.
Why?
Because that's how they pronounce it. They made it as if it's like a new thing.
All right.
HDR.
Something they invented?
Yes. Like, who are they? It's always funny. Who is the audience here? Right? Like, the enthusiasts who follow it know what HDR is. Investors know what HDR is. Everyone reporting on it knows what 4K and HDR is.
They know, though. They know that.
So who is like the dumb consumer who's like, whoa, there's a new thing that's 4K now?
The person that's paying that much money for an Apple TV?
No. But the thing is, so few people have upgraded to 4K that I think there's not a lot of...
But 4K awareness is through the roof.
4K awareness is, but people know that there's a more high-definition TV. I don't think people are as aware of HDR.
I agree with Jeremy, and they had a reason to sell HDR that comes up later with the phone. And I think that's really what they were setting up, is how important HDR is for your entire ecosystem, especially on your phone.
Right. So looks like the form factor is the same, $180. They didn't say it was a new chip, definitely new chip inside, so maybe the UI is faster. Remote is the same, unfortunately.
Ooh. No, it's not.
Oh, it's not.
The menu button looks like it might be a part of the touchscreen, and it has
even worse, has
a white outline around it.
Even
so there's,
worse.
There's some asymmetry to it now.
The fact that it's still that touchscreen, the fact that
You know what I wanted? I swear, this would be the simplest thing. Put a beeper in it, because I lose it constantly. And I just want to find my remote on my watch,
on
like
watch.
I find my phone.
Right.
That's what I want.
Questions are about content. So they have partnerships with almost every major studio except for Disney. To upgrade your existing 1080p movie library that you've bought from iTunes to 4K HDR, if it supports it, which is great.
For free. Did not expect that.
I think that's a great thing for consumers.
Because Blu-ray does not work that way.
No, absolutely.
If you own a Blu-ray, you got to buy it again.
If you own a 1080p Blu-ray,
yeah,
you got to buy 4K. This gets you, but bit rates, right? What are the bit rates? We don't know.
Yeah.
For this 4K stuff. I think and HDR.
They did say something about minimum bandwidth. Mm. It was substantial.
So I'm curious, and you obviously need a 4K and HDR TV to take advantage of all its benefits. They will support both of the HDR platforms, HDR10 and Dolby Vision, so that's good. My question, do the screensavers, were those shot in HDR?
Yeah, they said that.
The screensavers automatically get upgraded?
No, all new screensavers.
All new. Ah, the existing ones will not. I love the screensavers. That was on paper, sounded like such a stupid, silly thing. It has ended up being one of the nicest things about Apple TV are these constantly upgrading new surprise and delight screensavers.
Chromecast does the same. And Chromecast actually, I think, does a better job because it will pull active feeds from places like NASA.
No, I like this curated, beautifully shot.
Oh, come on.
You know there's a minimum bar
of
quality.
Shot of blue top to Saturn. Ugh, showing up on your Chromecast. Beautiful. All right, fine.
To each their own.
Apple TV.
I'm getting one.
Still, it's
you
still,
have a 4K HD TV.
I do. Yeah.
Okay.
HDR. Yeah. It's still, I can't wait.
I still think it's double the price of equivalent competition in Roku and Amazon Fire.
Well, do you have a lot? I mean, you have you're prime for it because you have the TV. Do you buy movies?
I also have an iTunes library of movies that we bought for the family.
That's a no-brainer. I mean, that really is. If you have a 4K TV or a 4K HDR TV and you have a good selection, then you're basically
stuck
getting the upgrade. All right. Phones. Let's talk about the phones. Well, actually, let's talk about iPads because they did not talk about iPads at this event. But guess what, guys? They raised the prices of the iPad.
No.
What? Like
$50.
You don't raise the prices. What? What are you talking about?
iPad Pro, $50 more. Exact same iPad.
They didn't put the new A11 chip in it?
Same thing.
No.
Yes.
That doesn't make any sense.
Google search it right now.
The
10.5-inch iPad Pro. So successful.
Wow.
They raised...
That's a great tablet. Like, but that makes no sense.
Never heard of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
That Apple quietly increases the prices of iPad Pro. $50 or more.
Well, they weren't making enough money. Have some sympathy.
Jeez. They mispriced their items. Isn't that bonkers?
Yeah.
All right, the phone. This was probably the most unceremonious iPhone announcement ever for the iPhone 8.
For the 8.
For the 8.
Because the 10 had a good announcement. We'll get to in a second.
The iPhone 8, the follow-up, there's no 7S, no 7S Plus. They went from 6 to S, 6S to 7, jumping to 8.
Yeah.
Any other year, this would have been a big deal. Apple's changing its naming convention. Like they're skipping the S upgrade. It's going to be a whole new thing. The 8 looks exactly like the 7, except now it's a glass back.
Mm-hmm.
Its new features has a slightly better display, True Tone display. Has wireless charging, which is enabled by that glass back, with the Qi standard, which is great. Some existing chargers will work with that. And has better camera system. So better 12-megapixel cameras on the back and better front-facing camera.
I think it's calibrated for AR too, right?
Yes, yes.
So we should talk about AR.
Absolutely. And then it also has a new portrait mode in beta. So it's going to do some of the computer vision stuff. The
portrait lighting.
Right. So the portrait mode from last year that gave you your thick bokeh now will also give you some lighting and darken the background, change the color tones in the faces. These are all, I trust Apple. I've been very happy with the portrait mode from last year's phone. So.
I actually really like that portrait mode lighting feature.
Conceptually, yeah. I mean, we haven't used it. And any other companies who tried to imitate Apple's portrait mode from last year, I think found out how difficult it was actually to get it right because none of them has looked as good or has been as reliable and done that processing at 60 FPS.
But we have reason to believe that they're going to nail this. So
yeah, exactly.
So I thought that was good. What did you think of the? Can we talk about the AR though?
What about it?
I mean, what did you think of the AR demo of the game?
And that made me think no one's going to play this. I mean, the mobile games that are successful are quick one shot games you can play on the toilet.
I also didn't understand why that game was in AR. It made no use.
Well, no, I mean, I kind of get it. It's a big 3D RTS landscape. You can sort of get a better viewpoint, and you can walk around the map. It enables you to basically have like mouse and keyboard control without.
But there was nothing kind of input from your environment that was crucial to that.
No,
experience.
It didn't augment. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. No, that's true.
So I didn't get that demo as showing off the technology, because what we've seen from ARKit has been more spectacular Yeah, from developers. So I was underwhelmed by that
piece. I think the utility of ARKit was not shown very well.
No. Yeah. I mean, the one demo, the one app they showed was MLB. It's actually something I thought about like at that baseball game. Like, well, if I had AR glasses right now, this would make this weight really cool.
It would make you look so smart, too. You'd have all these stats at your fingertips.
So many stats. I don't have to look around at the ads. I could have ads pop up in frame for me. Don't need to move my head at all.
But at the same time, that just made me think, you go to concerts these days, and it's nothing but kids with cell phones up.
But they're not recording. They're not ARing. They're not getting extra data.
That's true. They don't care about the pass-through. They're not looking at the concert. They're looking at their freaking screens.
That's what I'm talking about, AR as in glasses with a transparent display. Yeah, but we're called the phone.
But you're living in the future.
Right. As I want to, as I am, as is my prerogative.
You don't want to go to a baseball game and see people do this the whole time. Yeah,
no, I don't. Yeah, no. I mean, I would pull up the app for immediate stats on the player, because there's only so much digital billboard space in a stadium to give you the stats that you necessarily want, like pitch count and all that stuff. So I think that's gonna be useful. But also, I was thinking about was registration. Now we know AR is pretty good on these phones.
Yeah.
Like, there's not a lot of movement. And when there's not a lot of movement and lateral movement, rotational movement's great. On, like, something like a baseball game, you're actually going to get better AR tracking with the worse seats. Like, the higher angle and the higher up you are, the better the registration is going to be on the field.
Yeah.
And the players. If you're sitting behind, like, the batter, behind home plate,
well, I wonder if I can figure that out.
You're not going to get great AR.
That's interesting. Yeah, Dan Stapleton, old coworker of ours, suggested a good use of this of ARKit might be to do facial scanning for video games. So maybe not just even iOS games, but if a game maker on PC or any of the consoles were to release an app that allows you to scan your head in.
I think he was talking more about the face scanner.
Yeah.
Or Face ID.
Well, that's true too. But that's all the same, right? It's all just like the
AR. Mapping. It's mapping.
Yeah, it's being able to see the space and grab it.
But the mapping for face is different than for mapping for environments. We talked in projection, we talked about this, because mapping for environments, the registration points are more fixed in the room. Faces are a lot more detailed. Mm. You need the IR blaster.
So I'm going to say something slightly controversial. I actually think the 8 is a good buy. It got the upgraded chip. If you didn't get the 7 or 7 Plus, the price point on the 8 was pretty low, I thought.
It's higher than the previous, than the 7.
No, I thought
they raised it by $50.
I thought it was 700 something last year, and it was only $699.
No, it's more expensive. They've raised the average selling price.
Then I have it backwards. Sorry.
Yeah.
Never mind. I take that all back.
Well, so there is a new lineup. So holding off, talk about the X, the 10. But there is a new lineup now, and on the bottom end of the lineup is the iPhone 5e.
Oh, that's hilarious.
It's still available.
They call it the 5e.
Or what is it called? The SE? Special edition?
Yeah. That's a 5 series?
It looks like a 5.
Yeah, it's small.
Yeah, the SE. Sorry, I called the 5e as a 5. But everyone's thinking, no way, they're not going to make these small. It's the only phone that you can buy from Apple that still has that chamfered bezel that you can stand on its side. $350.
And they're still selling the 7S. Right?
And they're still selling. So right? is that still part of the line? Yeah, right. 5e. Then 6S, 7, 8.
No,
that can't be right.
No, 7, or just, just 7.
There is no...
Sorry, not 7S, 7. So the SE 7, 5.
There's a picture here.
This is comical, guys. Even.
Hold on.
It's SE 6S.
That's what I said. 7,
8,
and 10. That's what I said.
Yep. That's ridiculous.
That's what I said.
That is so... ridiculous. Okay, so why do you have the 7 on sale? Well, first of all, 6S, get the F out of here.
Hey, I have a 6S.
Why are you still selling that phone?
Has a headphone jack.
5E. SE, I get. Low, I mean,
entry level. People love that form factor.
Yeah, I get that a little bit. The 7 and the 8 are the same phone with different chipsets, basically.
Well, wireless charging. But yes.
Why are you selling the 7? No, right. Everyone to the 8.
8 has a better screen and some better features.
Yeah,
it's the 7S.
Yeah, but they would replace this phone.
This is
normally
a product lineup that Steve Jobs would never allow.
Yes, that's right.
I don't want to say guess what he would allow, but it is not in line with what they have demonstrated in the past, which is to announce one new phone and make last year's phone the quote-unquote cheaper upgrade and have an entry level. Now there is an entry level with the SE, which I guess it's the factories are still rolling. They still can manufacture those small screens. Might as well sell them. They're going to work in emerging markets. It still runs App Store, runs many apps. But I am really curious about the 6S and 7 offering both of those at a $100 difference for price point.
Especially
the difference between the 6S and 7. Why wouldn't you get a 7? Because that one started at 64 gigs.
Yeah, it doesn't make any
sense. By the way, the 6S, 7, and 8 all come in two sizes.
Oh, my
God. Yeah.
Oh my, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 phones. Man, that's a lucky number. They have 8 phones that are available for sale, but no iPods.
All right.
Screw the iPods. So the 8, $700 for a base model 8.
Now, in any other year, this might have been the new phone.
Right.
So let's
talk about
line
that.
Up for that.
Let's talk about that. If there was no high-end phone, if there was no 10,
yeah.
And this was the 8. First of all, would it merit calling it the 8? Or does this feel more like a 7S?
No, 7S.
And does it even feel like a 7S? What's the big feature? What's the Siri feature? What's the S feature? What's the Touch ID feature?
Wireless charging.
Make AR.
Better display.
Same resolution.
Yeah, but it's a...
What's the S feature?
Yeah.
There is no... It doesn't feel like it has an S feature.
No.
This is such an unceremonious release.
Did it feel a little bit like they put this out there so they could just add one more thing?
It really did. This is a phone that's going to be available for pre-sale soon. I feel like, and I know Apple doesn't release its numbers, I don't think they're going to announce after the weekend this is their best-selling iPhone, because I don't think people are going to buy this iPhone.
Well, I don't know, because the 10, that's, we might as well talk about it,
yep,
will be $1,000 minimum, and that's... You know, maybe that's only, what is it, cost difference? $200?
$300.
It's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
People are
going
to say...
You could buy two iPhones for the price of...
$200. $799 from the 7 Plus.
$699. Oh, 7 Plus, sorry.
Or the 8 Plus is $799.
Right.
Yeah, but not the Plus.
No, but the 8 Plus is the one that's comparable to the 10.
No, well, you could say the 8.
The screen dimensions of the 8 Plus are the same.
No, but just in terms of feature set.
Yeah.
You're right. The 8 Plus has a better camera and all that, but still...
All right, fine. Yeah.
So $200 to $300 difference is considerable, and people may need it now, and this phone is going to be available 6 weeks ahead of the 10.
I don't think no one's going to buy it. Plenty of people are going to buy this.
Yeah.
But it really calls to attention this weird launch of having not only jumping an S number, but also releasing a flagship that's not the flagship. Now there's the iPhone 10, which is very clearly the flagship. So let's talk about this. iPhone 10. All the leaks, all the rumors, all proved to be correct.
Mm-hmm.
It's a phone that's slightly bigger than your non-plus phone, your iPhone 7 or iPhone 6S.
In form factor. Yeah.
It's thicker than both the plus and the non-plus phones, slightly. But it has a bigger screen. Now, the screen's bigger because it's a different aspect ratio. It's not a same aspect ratio screen as... your plus or your non-plus phones.
No, it's like a 16x7. It's a very wide.
Very tall.
Yeah.
And that's because they got rid of the home button and moved much of the forehead and chin. Resolution-wise, it's 2436x1125. Very weird. It's weird because it's not quite 2.5K. It's still lower.
Mm.
But it's higher pixel density, of course, than any iPhone before. And it's an OLED screen.
Yeah. The first OLED good enough to be on an iPhone.
Good enough. That's just mad shit. Even though, guess who makes it? Samsung makes it.
Yeah.
They're still buying it from Samsung.
Look, OLED screen's a big deal. Because then, I mean, I get that you lose the home button, but you get the black. You get a real black on the screen.
Sure.
And then when you combine that with HDR... I think you're going to see a difference. And people that were that we trust really said this screen looks incredible.
Yeah.
Especially in that contrast.
So bright enough and outside, has all the vibrance, do HDR with the contents there. And the screen now it's curved. It's curved like the LG. A
little bit.
It's curved on the bottom. It's curved on the top. It has multiple curves. A content on the screen is going to look weird. Now, even though it's a higher pixel, higher resolution.
Do you mean it curves around the contour of the phone or the corners are curved?
Because corners are curved. Both.
Yeah.
There are no hard edges on the screen visible at all.
Yeah, I'm curious about that corner part because as a developer, you always deal with rectangles. And
guess what? You've got to frame your borders with white bars.
You'll be able to draw in the black, won't you? I mean, I assume you'll be able to place things down there that you'll
Apple guidelines say do not. Apple guidelines say add white bars.
Yeah.
Letterbox that.
So but you have to do that. That's what I'm saying. That. Yeah. So that's interesting.
Yeah. So that's a design choice. And, you know, yes, there are curved corners on the Samsung S8 and on the LG G6. But this is big for Apple. And it's a very tall phone. It's very funny because if you look at the screenshots of people who or photos of people who use this phone yesterday and use it in landscape mode, it's absurd. Viewing content, not movies, like web content or app content in landscape because it's such a wide phone.
Yeah.
With the borders, with that weird lip at the top of the forehead notch.
I think you can get used to that. I think that's an adjustment a human can make too.
Yeah, me too.
Now, in terms of its point resolution, so there's the pixel dimensions, right, which is higher pixel dimensions than your 1080p iPhone Plus sizes. But because it's higher pixel density, you actually see less content than you would on a Plus size phone because it scales smaller. Does that make sense?
Nope.
So there's a how do I best explain this? When you look at the content between a non-Plus and a Plus iPhone, on the Plus iPhone, if you compare like your phone, where you have the 6S and I have 6S Plus,
yeah,
side by side, view a web page, you're actually going to see more text on the Plus because of the way the web page is rendered and how they multiply the points versus pixels. The iPhone X renders it closer to the non-Plus phones.
Oh, really?
So you get better pixel density. Hmm. Everything's sharper, better anti-aliasing. Everything's crisper, but you see less content. Hmm. Things aren't smaller.
Interesting.
Things are still the same size.
Okay.
So you lose some of that benefit of the Plus phone, even though you technically have a bigger screen
right.
and more pixels to work with.
Okay.
I'm not super worried about that. That's not the feature that was – those aren't the features that really made me sort of stand up. I mean, let's talk about – I mean, should we just go to Face ID?
Yeah, so no Touch ID, and this was a big point of speculation. Who knows what the story is, whether they decided to intentionally just not put a Touch ID button on the back as many people had hoped for, or if it was a manufacturing delay, or if they held it back because it's going to be a next year feature. But regardless – they had to get something to replace Touch ID, and what they're using is Face ID. So, and it's clearly something they've been working on to be just as good as Touch ID
better.
For a long time. They say better.
They say that Touch ID had a 1 in 50,000 chance of being broken.
Right.
And Face ID has 1 in a million.
All right. That's going to be something that we're going to put to the test.
Yeah.
So there's a front-facing camera, looks a 7-megapixel wide-angle camera, along with a projector, infrared laser projector, hits your screen. Sensor reads the projection map, the dots on your face, and you have to scan it ahead of time to register your face, but it'll know when you're looking at it, so it does eye tracking, and will unlock your phone, in which case you have to then unlock it by swiping up. Now, sure, that might work.
First of all, there's two phases to that. There's the flood infrared. So there's a flood IR light on the front that gives you a full just infrared image of your face, and then 30,000 dots on top of that.
Got it.
So they combine those.
Right.
It's interesting.
Yeah. So they can actually do mapping.
Yeah.
Like topographical mapping on your face, and this is what could be useful for their Animojis, for video game character creations, for all sorts of crazy Snapchat applications.
You can map a room with that thing.
I don't know what the distance is because the dots. Sure. I think it's near field.
And most likely. Honestly, 30,000 dots isn't that much.
No,
it isn't. But if you're up close to something, but that's an interesting technology to have in the phone. Period.
Totally.
Let's assume the worst case here isn't failure. It's false positives. We don't want false positives. We rather, from user scenario, is it better to have false positives? Or is it better for it to fail?
I mean, obviously,
from a security purposes, it's better for it to fail. But from a user experience side, it's actually better for false positives because you never assume it's
until
it fails.
I 100% expect that next year's edition is going to have a fingerprint sensor on the back.
Oh, I don't think so.
Oh, I bet you, because like if you're in your car and you want to unlock your phone,
so that's the other thing. Assuming it works perfectly as they described it, the use case though of paying with Touch ID, Apple Pay, or unlocking your phone by having to hold it up and look at it, to unlock is not how people use their phones.
Yeah, because you have to give it your attention. If you're not looking at it, it won't do it.
And I don't want to have to give my phone that face attention when I'm doing things like double tapping the home button, which is no longer there.
It covers most of the use cases, but not all.
And paying for things, Apple Pay. You go to a thing, you put it up to the scanner. Currently, you touch your thumb, and it's sort of one motion. Now you're going to have to unlock first, then scan.
You can still double tap the power button.
To do what?
To bring up Apple Pay.
Right, and then scan, and then go. But it's still two-step thing. I don't know. I think it's going to be fun tech to play with. So I'm excited about it in that sense. But I do think that it's not going to be as good a user experience as Touch ID.
It's first-generation tech, basically, is how I look at it.
Yeah, but Touch ID was pretty solid first generation.
No, but that had been in a lot of other phones, non-Apple phones. And you know, we've had thumbprint scanners on devices for a long time. We haven't had this level of facial recognition in this kind of way with the added layer of security on top of it.
It's interesting that they said that twins can break it. That you can actually unlock your twin's phone, which wouldn't be the case with Touch ID.
Sure, if you're Tatiana Maslany in Orphan Black, man.
If you're running a comic book store together, you can share a phone for those payments.
I mean, think of those people. They're going to say, this security does not work for me.
Yeah, no, fake mustache only.
No hiding from your
different
twin.
Different hair. I mean, the demos they show with the different hair stuff.
I think technically it's kind of cool.
I absolutely think it's an interesting thing, but there's a difference between tech being interesting from a conceptual level and also being practical and good for the consumer.
Right.
And that's what we don't know.
We won't know either.
Until we use it for extensive periods of time.
From a security standpoint, they stand by it because everything that supports Touch ID now supports Face ID.
Now, from a user interface standpoint, there is no virtual home button either. They just got rid of it. A lot of speculation was, would there be a digital home button in iOS on the bottom that would come up and let you double tap and use the 3D touch to replace it? And it doesn't look like that's the case.
I don't think people are going to like this.
I don't think so either.
The swipe up is you have to swipe up a certain distance, and if you swipe up and hold, you bring up the multitasking.
Yep.
That felt sort of a level of imprecision that I'm not used to from Apple. It's just non-intuitive.
People like the button.
There's a lot about iOS that's beyond intuitive, but I think that that's actually not one of the things. I think people will actually figure that out.
I think it's going to stop people from double-tapping their home button and closing apps and thinking that's a good way to save battery. That's something that Apple's never stood by. So other features, massive screen, small form factor, silver bands around the side, glass front and back, has the same wireless charging, no headphone jack. It comes with headphones with the lightning cable. It does no longer comes with the adapter, I believe.
Yeah, it does.
It comes with the headphone adapter?
Yeah.
It was not listed on the website.
Dude, no, it comes with it.
I have to give credit. I feel like it's a throwback to the 4.
Mm.
A little bit in terms of its sort of rounded design. I like how that 4 looked too. So I think it looked good.
Actually, it's a very good throwback to the original iPhone with the shiny metal band around the outside and the glass front. The other thing is has fast charging now, but doesn't give you the cable for that. You have to get a special USB-C to Lightning cable if you want to do fast charging. And, fast processor, same cameras as the iPhone 8. You're really paying an extra $300 for the screen, the screen and form factor.
Yep.
Is a big question.
You do get wireless charging, but that's part of 8 too, so.
It has a headphone adapter.
Ah, it does have the headphone adapter.
Go ahead.
There are two models. It will be $1,000 for 64 gigabytes, which will be enough for some people, but probably not most because this will do 4K video and that's going to eat up so much space and all this portrait mode stuff. So $1,150 for
a
256 gig model.
If you were somebody that was already investing, what was it, 800 something?
It'll be $800 this year for iPhone 8 Plus.
Yeah, if you were investing that much in the 7 Plus last year, this isn't out of reason for you to go to the 10.
Percentage wise, no. Yeah, $200, a $200, a 20% difference is not astronomical, but it's still a $1,000 phone.
I'm just kind of surprised that the Lightning cable is not USB Type-C, which all their laptops, the MacBook Pro
fast charging
uses now.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't even connect the iPhone to the MacBook Pro
to charge it
unless you get another adapter.
Right. They never wanted you to connect your phones or computers anyway.
I can't believe that. I can't believe that this does not come with either a USB-C port on the phone
itself
or the right cable. That's just weird to me. Also, I was happy though that the wireless charging is open Qi support.
It's a subset, so it is Qi, but they're also doing special things that Apple only is doing, because they'll have a new AirPower pad.
That's different. They're contributing to the Qi standard for their AirPower pad,
which will let them relay information, data, yeah, across that standard as well. But it's up to other companies whether they'll adopt that. That pad will then charge your watch, your phone, as well as a new set of AirPod cases that they'll sell next year.
We actually didn't get much about the OS upgrade, so I'll be interested to see that.
Right, and I think a lot of people complaining about, you know, why didn't Apple jump in all AR? That's going to be down the line.
That's a WWDC
thing, absolutely. So no HomePod stuff, no new AirPods announced, no new iPads. That will be probably a different event.
Oh, both new phones have stereo sound. I'm actually kind of excited about that.
Yeah, that's the other thing. The new 8 will have much better sound. I remember that was a big thing, using your listening to music through your phone as a loudspeaker, and obviously using it as a voice conference device, teleconference device. So that's good. Availability, October 27th
for pre-orders for the 10.
And it ships a week later, November 3rd.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, so pre-order your iPhone, then come to the tested live show 2 days later.
Yeah, right. I think the next day. Unless you get the 8.
Does this mean they're having manufacturing problems?
That's absolutely it. Yeah.
So we didn't even talk about the big leak. Like the GM, the gold master for iOS, was leaked by supposedly, you know, people presume a disgruntled employee.
And the way it was leaked is that a URL was leaked. Basically,
yeah,
a hidden URL that wasn't supposed to be shared publicly was shared publicly, which is a terrible security measure.
It was shared with Apple, you know, websites, and everybody found all this information out ahead of time. There were no surprises left for the show except for what things actually looked like when you used them. And I, you know, credit to Apple, they didn't let it bother them. They seemed to just go with the program as if nothing had ever happened.
Tim Cook was rehearsing for 5 days straight leading to this event, 10 years after Steve Jobs did the same thing.
Honestly, though, I don't think it mattered. I don't think it changed a single thing. I don't think people didn't tune in. I don't think people cared any less.
I don't know. Phil Schiller spent way too long about fucking emojis and poop and animations. Emojis.
Yeah.
That was the only real drag. Everything else kind of moved along. And like we said, like the 8 doesn't make any sense in this event.
Like going back to what Jeremy was saying about the leak, Apple didn't care, it seemed like, but other people cared. And that was hilarious to watch online. People freaking out. How dare you spoil the Apple event for me? I love the ritual of watching the live stream on my Microsoft Edge browser on my Windows laptop so I can wait in line to buy an iPhone. How dare this be leaked?
Yeah.
And someone said, oh, would you care if they leaked? This is like leaking the script to a Star Wars film. Like, what?
I was shocked that people really still cared about
these
events as much as they do.
People pay for movies for the entertainment. They watch a film because that's the content. Yeah. The Apple keynote isn't the content. It's an infomercial. I'm sorry your two-hour infomercial was spoiled.
Exactly.
By the leak.
All right. I think that's enough, Apple.
Yeah. We got to go burst through some news because we're actually doing a big shoot. We can talk about this.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
We got to finish.
This is a special preview for people out there who are listening to the podcast, listeners, what's happening in the Tested office today is something magical and special. And after we finish this podcast, what we've been doing this whole morning, we've been building the Lego Millennium Falcon, the UCS Falcon.
So Norm made his choice, iPhone 10 or UCS Falcon.
Thankfully, I didn't have to make the choice. The choice is always to donate to Ehrman Relief.
That's right.
And we were hooked up with a set by a friend. Friend of the site, Tommy Williamson, who runs BrickNerd.com. He actually made this Star Trek Lego laser or a phaser.
That's his design?
His design.
Oh,
yeah,
it's beautiful.
It's my own creation. It's an original series phaser made of Lego. He's in the office today, and he brought the Falcon, and we are building it together. It's a speed build.
I assume they're done by the time we go back out
there.
They better be.
So we gotta get out to building, but we're gonna go through some news quickly.
I'll put us into the lightning mode.
Well, I got this. So do-it-yourself headphone jack on the iPhone 7?
Yes.
That's it. Dude, this is a cool video. You gotta check this out.
It's the same dude that built his own iPhone.
From spare parts. He lives in China, around Shenzhen, and so he's well-connected. but he's you know, he just is into electronics. He's not a, like an electronics genius engineer, though. He's sort of a hobbyist. He took it upon himself to add a headphone jack to the 7. My man, yes, preaching to the choir. I want this myself. I swear, if the iPhone 8 actually had a headphone jack, I would seriously consider that over the 10. Anyway, watch this video. Google it. It's a good dramatic video of him going through this struggle. No spoilers. And second of all, somebody made AI that can not just play Super Mario Brothers, but actually watched the video of it. The AI watches the game and then can actually remake the game.
What does that mean? Remake it.
Burn it with fire.
Like, it watches video of somebody playing.
I can watch frame by frame and trace the frames.
And then it deduces the mechanics.
Oh. And make levels?
Yeah.
Burn it with fire.
Well, it remakes the same level, but from scratch. And so it sort of deduces that if Mario is above a Goomba and headed downward, the Goomba dies.
By patterns.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
So Mario has to step on a certain number of Goombas.
But
by logic, they could, all sorts of weird things can happen.
How many times does it have to play through for it to learn that, right? Because
it's glitchy.
That's
but
amazing.
That's a new level. That's a new kind of AI thinking. I dug that.
All right. Also related to Nintendo, we know the SNES Classic is coming out at the end of this year, but Nintendo is bringing back the NES Classic.
No.
Next year. They are.
What?
Yes. NES Classic will be back in stock next year.
That's fine. What's wrong with that?
Well, it's totally fine.
Because everyone thought we got the limited edition.
Well, we did, because there's no way this new NES Classic
is going to be
hackable.
It was too limited.
Oh, you don't think so?
No, absolutely not.
Why? This next looks like it will be.
It will be?
I mean, it's got the USB jack on the back, and they didn't have a whole lot of time to re-engineer it.
Well, I bet the NES Classic, the new one, and if it is a case that the new NES Classic, the one they release next year, will not be hackable, then that will be a clear indication that that's why they cut off supply for that one, because they freaked out. And
cool.
No word about the game selection. Assumption is it's going to be the same games.
There's a leak of two new Amazon Fire models coming out. Fire TV Stick, not super memorable, it's all faster. But what's interesting is a new Fire TV, which is a cube that goes on the next to your TV, and it has Alexa built in. So it'll have Echo Dot functionality and be an Amazon Fire TV at the same time.
Wow.
I think that's actually kind of great.
Okay. It's like a big Amazon show. Because it's on your TV.
Well, no, it's still a smaller device than the show.
No, but I mean in terms of its screen.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll go one last bit of news. You guys check out eBay lately? buy some stuff on eBay?
Yeah, no, I check out eBay from time to time.
Yeah?
Yeah, is there anything expensive I can buy on eBay?
Well, are you a fan of the Wu-Tang Clan?
You know, I should be. I'm not.
Wu-Tang Clan ain't nothing, huh?
Right. Yeah.
Logo looks like a phoenix. That's a leftover stroke.
Nope. No lip.
So someone's selling something?
Yeah. So,
King of the Douchebags, Martin
Shrecky. To maybe pay for his legal troubles, I don't know.
Yeah.
Is now auctioning the record that he only had permission to listen to. And,
well, he bought it. He paid $1 million for the one copy.
A gold master of Once Upon a Time in Shaolin.
Right.
And now it's on eBay.
I like how in the title for the eBay thing, he puts rare CD.
Yeah.
Yeah. No kidding.
It started at $1 million.
The current bid is $1 million.
$1,300. Yeah. 300 some bits, though.
Let's start that Kickstarter right now.
Oh, God.
Indiegogo.
I'm good.
Give it to the people. Who do you think is going to buy it?
The RZA and the GZA?
That would be terrible. No one wants to put money in this guy's pocket.
He's even a dick in his description of what he's selling. I decided to purchase this album as a gift to the Wu-Tang Clan for their tremendous musical output. Instead, I received scorn from at least one of their least intelligent members.
Oh, come on.
And the world at large failed to see my purchase of putting a serious value behind music.
Ugh. Yeah.
Boo.
Better ways to spend your money on eBay.
All right, moment?
Yes, do it.
Moment of silence.
All right, there's only one story this week. Let us all shed a tear for the Cassini probe, which is entering its last few hours alive as it does its spiral into the Saturn atmosphere, ending its probe's life. This probe has given us so much, this Cassini probe, including documenting what's happening on Enceladus with water and methane lakes, never before seen peaks into the Saturn atmosphere, understanding how those rings are formed. There's so much data collected that really challenged the notion of how we understood Saturn to be formed, and especially about the potential for life on some of its moons. Because it's low on propellant fuel, they decided in order to not cause contamination on one of the moons, they have to destroy the probe rather than leave it out there and potentially crash on one of the moons. So it's going to be entering the Saturn atmosphere. There's no oxygen in the Saturn atmosphere for it, so it's technically not going to burn up, but it's going to light white hot through as it burns up in the atmosphere, and we'll be getting readings up until it's going into the atmosphere, even though they're a few minutes delayed. There's a huge collection of scientists and science communicators at NASA JPL. They'll be watching live tomorrow on Friday as it descends into its glory. Thank you, Cassini.
So it just descends into the
atmosphere and burns up.
Mm-hmm. How about that? It just becomes a part of Saturn.
Yep.
Awesome. Let's move on to our next segment.
The VR Minute, virtual reality this week.
All right, so this we're in a kind of a funny spot with the VR Minute this week because it is public knowledge within the VR community that Jeremy and I got a demo this week of a new VR headset. It's from this company, Pimax. Pimax, they released a 4K headset, and now they have an 8K headset that I guess they're going to launch. It's going to there'll be an announcement for it next week.
Quick question. Did they paparazzi you? How do they know that you got this demo?
So we got the demo because they reached out and offered a demo to us. And so as typically happens with press and PR, we agreed to do a demo to give our opinion to you guys out there and film a video about it and hold for an embargo. And then they released that on their forum saying that we would get the demo to, I guess, build excitement around their product and also to solicit some questions on our behalf.
Mm-hmm. This week, Jeremy Williams comes in for an exclusive look at Pimax.
And I was so conflicted about this. PR never does this. Like, if you think about, like put in the context of an Apple phone, Apple would never come out, hey guys, The Verge is going to review the phone, guys. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about it.
Not publicly,
yeah. Right? Like, so I felt really, I felt kind of uneasy about it. But I, the more I thought about it, it's like it's totally their prerogative to let people know that they're giving these people demos. And if anything, and then it puts the onus on us to give it the fair shake it deserves and to make sure that we're accountable to be as comprehensive as we can be in our coverage of this. What I can say, because we can't talk about the actual experience yet, I can say that we were as comprehensive as we could be, and what we'll be doing for our video impressions, which will be out next week, is we'll be answering those questions. The people that post questions on the forums and the Reddit thread, they list as many of those as we could have asked them. There's some little bit of a language barrier at times, but we'll share our opinions and answer your questions directly.
There you
go. You can look forward to that.
I think you called your show Impressions just now.
No, we'll be sharing our impressions
projections,
which will be out next week. This isn't really related to VR, but I put it in the VR Minute. But, you know, Red announced their smartphone.
Yeah, a while back.
And the thing that was supposed to be novel about the smartphone was it had a holographic display.
Yeah.
They said it was not like a lenticular display. And
All new,
right. And it's finally revealed what this display is, if not exactly how it works. It turns out that Red has a partnership with a company called Leia.
That's the name of the project. It's Synaptics is the name of the company.
Right, and they have this screen that's a light field holographic display. And if you search YouTube, there's a video from a couple years ago that shows off. It's just like a marketing video about Leia, spelled just as you would think, L-E-I-A, Leia holographic, Leia mobile holographic displays. It just means that it can. It's almost like a smart version of what the Fire Phone did.
You know, the most dangerous thing about trying to sell a product like this is you can't advertise it. You can't show people what it's like.
You can't show 2D video of this and then have it make any sense.
You can't put it on TV. It's like trying to sell HDR.
It's like trying to sell VR.
Exactly.
Right? Like, filming video gives you nothing about this. We got to see it in person. This is exactly the kind of thing hopefully we'll see at like a CES or something. But at least we know it's not magical technology. It is something that's known, been in the works for a while.
Any technology sufficiently advanced will appear as magic.
That's right. Not if you live in the future.
I'm curious about it. I want to see it.
Sure.
Yeah, there you go.
Last thing, a local research group called SRI, located near Stanford, has been using VR in one of the kind of coolest ways possible. They hooked up VR to a bomb disposal robot because they think the tracking and the hand movement is much better in VR than it was in just the regular 2D display that was used in the past.
Yep.
To manipulate the robot. It's really interesting use case.
Oh, so they control the robot with a
telepresence. It's telepresence using a VR rig. And when you're talking about a robot that it's very, very controlled and deliberate moves, does not need very high latency, it just needs very fine control. Seems like VR would be a perfect solution for
that. Sure, and this is like a closed connection, obviously. And given the situation, you want them to be as precise as possible, right? This seems like a great use case of VR.
I don't know, but it's not VR. They don't need the VR. They just need the controllers, like the fidelity of the track controllers.
Yeah. But, I mean, but also being able to sort of turn and have like a wider field of view.
Okay.
That's not bad either. Yeah. I mean, they don't need it for,
I think that does it for us for the very short VR Minute. You got anything, Jeremy?
For VR Minute? No, but we're skipping what we've been testing this week because we're a little short on time.
Yes, we are. Things on the site this week. We should have hopefully, if we get it approved, a one-day build up later this morning for you. And assuming we get to wrap up this other build we've been building this whole day, you'll see that on the site shortly. We're going to do it hopefully in less than 34 hours.
I think there's a Science in Progress coming soon where we dissect a brain.
Yeah, it's coming next week. And we also wrap our last Bits to Atoms without spoiling
the
episode.
Not the final Bits to Atoms, like the
most recent.
The most recent.
The most recent Bits to Atoms. It is pinball themed.
Yeah, indeed.
Oh, and I can say I bought a pinball thing.
As did I. We can talk about it next week, I guess.
We'll talk about it next week. All right. We have an outro?
Test it. Hi there, I didn't see you.
Test it.
I just assumed it was after the Korea hack and they were like, fuck it, do whatever you want, here's some money.
Test it.
Bye.